in the air. Brito back at the wall. Adios, pelota!
That's the type of manager that I'd like to be, which is the same every day. They know what they're going to get. They're going to get energy. They're going to get accountability. They're going to get structure, and they're going to get support. And I'm going to bring those things to the dugout in the clubhouse regularly.
It takes hard work, and it takes humility, taking one step forward at a time, making one good baseball move after another. And I really feel like that's how we're going to get where we hope and intend to go.
You're listening to Bags and Brisby on Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 110 of the Bags and Brisby podcast. I am Grant Brisby. I'm here with Andy Baggerly. How are you doing, Andy?
I am rolling along. How are you?
I'm doing okay. This is our final regular installment of the podcast for the 2020 season. We will be back as news dictates. But let's start by talking about the sad news. It just keeps coming in 2020. Hall of Famer Joe Morgan, who played two seasons for the Giants, but they were so impactful. Joe Morgan passed away, and so we have to acknowledge just the presence he was, the baseball presence, just such a legend on and off the field. This news just hit me really, really hard.
Yeah, I think that for Giants fans of our era or our vintage, you know, the home run that he hit to knock the Dodgers out is one of your favorite moments as a Giants fan, even though that was a spoiler moment. It still just says so much about sort of the DNA of a Giants fan that was such an iconic memory. And of course, he's from Castlemont High. He moved to the Bay Area from Texas when he was young. And I think we tend to forget about his East Bay roots and his Oakland roots. And you know, because of everything that happened afterwards, and you think about Ricky and you think about all the other Bay Area legends, you kind of forget that, you know, probably the greatest second baseman in Major League history is a Castlemont High kid as well. And, you know, one reason it hit me pretty hard, I think, is because, you know, we were all looking for things to write about when there was no sports going on in March and April and May. And I was looking for things that I could, you know, 25th anniversary of this or the 30th anniversary of that. And one thing I stumbled upon was Sunday Night Baseball. ESPN Sunday Night Baseball started up 30 years ago. And I wrote something talking to John Miller, who put me in touch with Joe Morgan, about their relationship as broadcasters together on the same broadcast every Sunday for 20 years, aside from Pat Summerall and John Madden. It was the longest national broadcast partnership in sports in this country. And just their personalities and their friendship and what they meant to each other. And I really, really appreciated getting to talk to Joe for about an hour and just get a sense for his spirit and his determination and all the ways that he was a special person, that he just was built to be extraordinary because of his force of will. So yeah, I was really, really sad when I heard the news. Just a gut punch with all the Hall of Famers we've lost this year.
My heart goes out to Joe Morgan's family first and foremost, but the person I thought of right away was John Miller, just because he has to be absolutely devastated. That was one of his best friends, you know, one of his favorite people on the planet. And so I thought of him immediately because that was a pretty, pretty special relationship they had.
I don't know if this one got in the story or not, but this is straight out of my, this is what he told me.
Everything that I've did as a player, like you mentioned, you know, as a Hall of Famer, as a world champion, I tell people I have been blessed, you know, to have such a great baseball career. And then to have, you know, the career in broadcasting, especially when I was 5'5", 150 pounds, and they're saying you're too small. And for all this to have happened to me, I'm just blessed. If I had to choose one thing, it would be being a Major League Baseball player. You know, I didn't set out to make the Hall of Fame. I just set out to be a Major League Baseball player. And to accomplish that, and then to accomplish, you know, the broadcast thing, because I won two Emmy Awards. And that was during the time when John Madden was winning every year. I broke his first streak, and then he went on another one, and I broke the second one. I'm sitting in my man cave now, and I look around every day now, especially now. Something in here reminds me of something. Something, I got my Emmy Awards up on display. I got my championship trophies. I got stuff. All these things remind me of where I came from, because I got, you know, I grew up in Oakland, and, you know, and what I've accomplished. And so I don't try to get specific and say, you know, the greatest thing I ever did was make the Hall of Fame, or the greatest thing I ever did was win two Emmy Awards, or the greatest thing I ever did was this or that. I don't really look at my life that way. I have four daughters, all of them smart as hell, and that might be the best accomplishment.
They've gone to Stanford, USC, an attorney in Oakland. He has twins working at Stanford. One's a nurse practitioner. Another one works for Snapchat, has a great job in San Francisco. And she's been staying home with him during these last months. One living in LA and one living in Oakland in the house that they built there. And he spoke with so much pride about raising four just strong, independent women. And that was such a point of pride for him. And so, yeah, I just wanted to share that because it really kind of almost summarizes, you know, just what he was all about.
Man, that was pretty powerful. Heart goes out to his family, to his friends. When you talked about that home run and being important to Giants fans, I think it's a really important home run to understand. Like you said, the DNA of a Giants fan, you have to understand why it was such a big deal, because in the 70s, the Giants fell into the toilet. The team of Mays and McCovey just became this also-ran, this team that just kept giving their lunch to the Dodgers. And the Dodgers were winning championships, and they were the golden children of the National League West, and the Giants couldn't touch them. But in 1982, they were close, and they were battling. They were battling. It was a three-way race between the Braves and the Dodgers, and the Giants were knocked out toward the end of the season. I think there were two games left. The Giants were out. They couldn't win the division, but they could spoil it for the Dodgers. And Morgan hit the home run that ended up knocking the Dodgers out. And when you watch the highlight, you could see the players and how seriously they took it. They were tired of the Dodgers eating the Giants lunch. I mean, they were tired of it, and the fans were tired of it. It was constant year after year after year. And finally, they got to poke Goliath in the eye. Finally, they got that. And Morgan, you know, when you saw him running around the bases, he was clapping his hands, and he was met outside of the dugout by the entire team. It was a big, big deal. You know, when you look at it on the surface, it's, wow, the Giants were spoilers. Haha, they sure got the Dodgers. But no, it meant a lot more than that. So, you know, he only played with the Giants for two seasons, but that's a huge memory to leave for him.
Yeah, that's great and so well stated. And you wonder, it's a little different now, right? I mean, the Giants have won three World Series, so... But, you know, the Dodgers have won the division, what, 8 years in a row now? So maybe it's time for someone else. You wonder who the next maybe veteran they acquire as a sort of a side piece could step into that moment and kind of redirect the orientation of these two franchises and start to help the Giants build back to be the top team in the NL West again, because it's becoming a pretty foreign feeling to come on top. Out on top against the Dodgers. They've just got such a stranglehold on the division right now.
And here's something about Joe Morgan. So you know that he's got the home run, and that's the reason he lives in Giants lore. But here's an underrated reason why he should be in Giants lore. Because after that home run, on December 14th, he's traded to the Phillies. And who do the Giants get back in that trade? Mike Kruko. So without Joe Morgan, you might not have Kruk and Kipe, and that's dead serious. That's the reason why Mike Kruko became a Giants legend.
Wow, I always forget that little detail. Yeah.
That was all set up by the Bill Madlock trade, because that brought Ed Whitson to the Giants, and Ed Whitson was traded for Dwayne Kuiper. So if the Giants don't trade Bill Madlock, they don't get Kruk or Kipe. It's, I don't know, I'm a nerd about this.
You know what, though? It's really good to look at it from a positive standpoint, because then you forget that the Giants traded away like, you know, Gary Matthews and George Foster. I mean, they traded away a staggering amount of really talented outfielders. They just like gave them away in the 1970s, and then they've gone the last 15 years without being able to develop one, which is a kind of strange, and hopefully that's about to end. But yeah, the Giants had a lot of players that, like, Bill Madlock, a guy who won batting titles. He was a Giant until he wasn't.
We'll be right back after this. I always just love looking at that trade tree. It used to be back in the early days of the internet. Greg Perlman was obsessed with this trade tree. It all comes down from Bobby Bonds and extends through Kruko and Kuiper. You can go all the way back to this one trade. It's fascinating stuff. But, you know, that's an underrated part of Joe Morgan's tenure with the Giants. He's the reason Kruko was here. He had the home run. You know, when I search Joe Morgan home run on Google, the first thing that pops up is a home run he hit for the Phillies in the World Series. The 1983 World Series. And it's just like, man, everywhere he went, he was just awesome. You know, when he was 40, he's putting up an on-base percentage of .356. His defense is still, you know, average or a little bit above average. That's when he's 40. But then you look at his best years, and when he was winning back-to-back MVPs, I just marvel at the stat line. It's like Mike Trout, except he's a Gold Glove second baseman. I mean, that's the only way to put it. He's leading the league in walks. He's got 67 steals one year. He's hitting for 27 homers. Just one of the most amazing runs in baseball history.
You know, I love that 83 Phillies team. Because, you know, the 1950 team that won the pennant was the Whiz Kids, because they were all young guys under 25, Richie Ashburn, Robin Roberts. So in 1983, somebody, I don't know which press box wag made this up, but they called them the Whiz Kids because everybody was ancient. Morgan was 39. Tony Perez was 40. Pete Rose was 41. Steve Carlton was on that team. He was 38. Tug McGraw was 38. Here we go. Philadelphia Daily News sports writer Stan Hockman gave them the Wheeze Kids nickname, and it was quickly adopted. And yeah, I love it. That's one of my favorites.
That is good. That is good. Yeah, Steve Carlton, 38. Wow. Giants legend Steve Carlton right there.
Former Giants hitting coach Joe LaFay was quite a bopper on that team.
I was about, I'd say, 32 when I figured out how to play.
Yeah, I mean, the baseball makes it tough on you because there was also a Jim Lefebvre, you know, who was a manager for the, Cubs and Seattle Mariners. He played for the Dodgers. So you had a LeFay and a Lefebvre, and they're spelled pretty much the same way. So
is that it?
Yeah, I think that's how it got in your brain.
Oh, my gosh. That makes me feel so much better because that was like a Berenstain Bears thing or like the Mandela effect. I was thinking, I know that this guy's name wasn't LeFay the whole time I was growing up. I just know it, but I'm going to shut up because clearly I'm wrong. But no, there was a Lefebvre.
Are you talking about the Berenstain Bears?
Yeah, see, that's where you go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, you know what, though? I tell you what, baseball's a lot easier than hockey. To me, hockey is the most impossible one because, you know, you've got a lot of people who just don't have vowels in their name. But also, there's a lot of players. Like, I remember I was at Mighty Ducks camp one year when they were still the Mighty Ducks. And I was supposed to write something on Denny Lambert. Okay, Denny Lambert, right? That's easy. No, it's Lambert. Ah, damn it. And so I'd Frenchify another one, and they'd be like, no, it's Colbert. I'm like, God, gosh darn it. I couldn't pronounce anyone's name right.
No, I mean, the gold standard is Krzyzewski. That is, I stare at that name sometimes, Mike Krzyzewski, and I try and figure it out, and I'm not smart enough. I don't possess the levels of brain that it takes to get Krzyzewski to Krzyzewski. I'm not smart enough.
You know what? I was, what's his name? Matt Caesar. That one's great. Yeah. It's S-C-Z-C-Z-U-R, I think. And somehow it's pronounced just like Julius Caesar. So it works out great.
All right. The Giants released a statement about the passing of Joe Morgan. Larry Bear made the following statement on behalf of the Giants organization. Quote, Joe had a long and distinguished career on the field, in the broadcast booth, and in the community, and his passing leaves a hole in the unique fabric of our great game. Our condolences go out to the Morgan family for their tremendous loss, and we extend our thoughts to Joe's teammates, his friends, and to all those touched by his passing, end quote. So a pretty tough day in Giants-dom, in baseball in general, and just one of the most fantastic baseball players who ever lived. So rest in peace, Joe Morgan.
And not only that, you've lost Bob Gibson this year, lost Lou Brock, lost Al Kaline, Whitey Ford. And it seems especially tough this year because people pass away, right? It's part of the bargain of being on this planet. But, you know, we didn't get to celebrate any new Hall of Famers this year either. So it's just been a tough, tough year for that Cooperstown community and a tough year for especially the African-American legends, three of them passing away in the same year. I'm still coming to terms with Ernie Banks not being here and Frank Robinson. So it's really, really tough to think about all of that expertise and all of that talent and all of those legends and those life experiences kind of sort of shuffling off, and you hope that new legends are created and we all sort of appreciate the careers and the lives that they had.
Do you think that the Frank Robinson Award is going to be the new name of the Most Valuable Player Award? Do you think that there's any traction in that?
Oh, I hope so. I think it makes all the sense in the world because you've already got, you know, a Hank Aaron Award. You've already got a Babe Ruth Award. Frank Robinson is, you know, one of the game's all-time greats, an Inner Circle Hall of Famer, and the only person ever to win the MVP in both leagues. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And the BBWAA did vote by a pretty wide margin to take Kennesaw Mountain Landis's name off of the MVP award, which I didn't even realize it was on there to begin with. But if you're going to name it for someone, they don't have to, but it sure would seem to be a great honor for Frank Robinson. I just wish that they'd done it while he was still with us and would know that his legacy would be carried on with something like that.
All right. Well, let's switch gears to talk about, as you put it, let's wrap a bow on this 2020 Giants season. We've talked about whether it was a success or not, and I think we both agree that in some measure it was a successful season, even though the Giants didn't finish over 500 or at 500. But just final thoughts on the 2020 season, where they are, where they're going. I think it was a productive season, a weird season, a season that will never be replicated in like 50 different ways. But overall, it was a fun Giant season, and we were never guaranteed a season at all. So we will take the fun as it comes.
No, absolutely. I got to be honest, even though it's my job, watching Giants baseball the last couple years, especially at home, has been tough. It hasn't been a team that's provided a lot of entertainment value. And, you know, I go back to my experience as just a sports fan. And, you know, the number one thing I'm a fan of that I watch, you know, just as a, you know, leisurely, as purely as a fan, is college football. And I think about, what do I want to get out of a season? And, you know, my team is Northwestern. It's not Ohio State. I don't think of the national championship. But I want a team that I can enjoy watching, that's going to have a little razzle dazzle, that's going to, you know, really, you know, keep you on the edge of your seat and have those roller coaster ups and downs in a game and win more than you lose, obviously. And just be people that you have, people that you take pride in rooting for, you know, good people. And that's the experience that I think, as I've gotten older, it isn't win every game at all costs. It's more just have a good experience. And the Giants had not been a good experience the last couple of years, especially 2019. It was just at home. They couldn't score. They didn't give you enough opportunities to get out of your chair and clap. And this team, you know, finished under 500, missed the postseason by a game, but they gave you a lot of opportunities to get off your sofa and clap and hopefully out of your stadium seat next year. They were fun to watch, and they were compelling in a lot of different ways. And aggravating in other ways. But I think by that measure, it was a very successful season. And a lot of people got better at the major league level, even veterans. And that was the whole point of this coaching staff under Gabe Kapler. And I think you've got to sing their praises a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good point. I really like the analogy to college football because, okay, look, I'm a San Jose State grad. And they're not going to be playing in a bowl game that anyone cares about. They are not, you know, very good generally. They are not a historic football program. Well, that's
I
not
love
true.
How
they
you searched for an adjective and you landed on good.
They are, you know, they do have a rich legacy when you talk about, you know, Bill Walsh and Jeff Garcia and stuff like that. But they're just, you know, you're not going into San Jose State and thinking I'm in it for the championships. You're not. What you're going in there for is you want to see that one game. You want to see them, you know, battle against an SEC opponent like Arkansas and come out on top. And that's, you know, what they did. And Arkansas obviously was a bad SEC team, but it was just fun to say, okay, this is a team that sometimes does stuff, and San Jose State beat them. Ha ha. That's what you're looking for. And so it's different with baseball, but you still want that. You just want to root for a team or watch a team that entertains you. And that's what the 2020 Giants did, where the 2018 Giants for sure didn't do, or the 2017 Giants. My goodness, that was a wretched team. So, you know, those are the little things you're looking for. And that's why the 2020 Giants felt like a breath of fresh air.
And they did. And you wonder if some of that is, you know, they refreshed the coaching staff, obviously, and not to pin it on Bruce Bochy, but, you know, there were a lot of changes made to try to invigorate the environment, and a lot of personnel changes as well. A lot of people who are hungry, who haven't won World Series titles, and even some of the guys who do have rings, like the Brandons, played with a lot more energy and got better. So I think in a lot of ways, it was just a season that there was a lot of invigoration going on. Is that a word? Invigoratingness. And what good timing too, right? I mean, we're all just starved for something to watch, to uplift us and to root for and entertain us and distract us a little bit, you know, wondering if this baseball season was even going to be a good idea. And you know what? There were a couple of things that happened. There was, you know, wildfire smoke in Seattle, and there was, you know, the day when Mookie Betts wasn't going to play after the shooting in Kenosha, and the Giants were in lockstep with the Dodgers on deciding not to play to have a day to think about, you know, racial injustice and police brutality. And of course we had, you know, guys including Gabe Kapler taking a knee for the anthem all season long. And then, you know, the false positive COVID test that Alex Dickerson had, thank goodness was a false positive, and he and his wife welcomed their baby boy a week later with no problems. So grateful for all of that. But yeah, there was a lot to navigate, and yet they were able to get this season off the ground. They were able to complete it, all 60 games, and they provided a lot of entertainment value at a time when I think a lot of people were looking for it and needed it. And so obviously they really, really would have liked to have won one more game and taken their cracks against the Dodgers in a first round series. But, I still think you can't call the season a failure because they just came up short.
When I think back to the 2019 season, I generally have positive feelings of the 2019 season. It was more fun than expected. They were contending through the trade deadline. They had a rough August, but that was an exciting team. But an underrated component of that team's misery was that the players who struggled were the familiar faces, the players who were just recently good, like right over there. You know, in 2016, the Giants are really good in the first half of the season. It's because Brandon Crawford and Brandon Belt and Buster Posey and Joe Panik. And now, you know, in 2019, you have Buster Posey having a career worst offensive year. The Brandons are just not doing anything. Brandon Crawford in particular was awful in 2019. Joe Panik was so bad that the Giants had to cut him loose, and it was an understandable move. And it was tough to watch all these guys who were recently just the biggest parts of the Giants' success, the reason that they were so fun to watch, and now they're the reason they're not fun to watch. That was really, really hard. And so that is one of the best parts of the 2020 season, is that Brandon Belt and Brandon Crawford kick butt. And, you know, Buster Posey, he was missed, but at the same time, you had these familiar faces, Pablo Sandoval and Hunter Pence notwithstanding, but these guys were responsible for the Giants winning in these great, great moments. And that's an underrated part of the 2020 season.
Yeah, and beyond that, I think you saw a lot more cohesiveness because there wasn't the kind of just completely crazy player movement that there was in 2019. I mean, they used 64 players in National League record, and it was a tough thing to cover because you didn't know if you needed to even introduce yourself to the next new face in the clubhouse because they could be gone the next day, like Aaron Altherr was. And I think that made it really difficult to have some cohesion in the clubhouse. And you had a new front office with a legacy manager at the same time, not to suggest that there was conflict there. I think that they handled that as well as could be handled. But you knew that it was, you know, they couldn't really jump in with both feet on this rebuild that they had to do because they still had to pay respect to their outgoing, you know, soon to be Hall of Fame manager. And, you know, I think that showed. I think it showed in a lot of ways. They played like a distracted team. And even though they stayed on the fringes of contention long enough to keep Madison Bumgarner at the trade deadline, they were wretched at home. I mean, they tied for the worst home record in San Francisco Giants history, and they couldn't score at home at all. So, you know, they obviously turned that around and they played so much better at home this season. Their offense worked at home, and part of that was the ballpark. I think part of it was their hitting philosophy and their personnel. And it just sort of, all of that gives you a little bit more promise that this is going to be a team that can win at home again, because that's going to be a huge dynamic as they attempt to compete with, you know, a Dodgers team that's not going to get any worse and a Padres team that is ascendant.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And the way that the Giants were relevant in 2020, like you said, it gives you hope for the future. And you can count the ways where it's not Mike Yastrzemski and Donovan Solano, not just like giving their gains back or treading water, but they got better. You know, they got better. It seems sustainable. The Brandons, the way that the Giants were able to fix them and sort of get them back on track, that augurs well for the future. Just every sign about the offense makes you think, okay, they can do this again or they can figure it out. The pitching, I'm not so sure about that, but at the same time, Kevin Gausman, Drew Smyly, they were good finds. That gives you faith in the brain trust. And then you have a bullpen where it was up and down, and I'm actually writing about it right now, and boy, the downs were down. You have the foundation for next year's bullpen. You know, they're in place where you're talking Tyler Rogers and Caleb Berger and a couple of others. I mean, you've got four or five guys that you can reasonably count on for next year. So it's trending upward. You just need a season where they're over 500 to get really excited.
Yeah, Berger was certainly, I think, one of the high points of the pitching story of the season. Probably the lowest point was Johnny Cueto, and I didn't realize until you'd really done the digging that you can make a case that he was the worst starter in the National League. I mean, that they've got one more very, very expensive year of Johnny Cueto left, and I think that it was going to be pretty important for him to be, you know, maybe not an ace, but, you know, sort of a top tier type of starter to take the pressure off the rest of the rotation. And I don't know if we can comfortably pencil him in for that next year based on what we saw this season. So, yeah, they've got a lot of work to do, and they're going to have a lot of choices, I think, as a lot of, you know, arbitration guys are probably going to get non-tendered as teams look to save money after the financial, you know, impacts of 2020. So, you know, that sort of, I think, augurs well. I love the word augur. Let's do some more auguring.
It's a good word.
Because as you noted, they're good at finding guys. They're good at finding value. And if they're going to have more choices out there and more players, then that's going to give them even more opportunities. And I still think they'd love to re-sign Gausman and Smyly. I don't know if they'll be able to. But here's one more. How about a certain KBO star, Ha Sung Kim? Have you seen video of him? He's going to be posted by the Kiwoom Heroes. He's a shortstop. He is fun to watch. I'll take one of him.
I know. I have. And I was thinking, okay, so where he is primarily a shortstop, correct, in the KBO?
Yes.
So the idea is your genius idea to move him around like a Ben Zobrist type or just kind of park him at third and say, you know, we'll use you in platoon situations, Evan Longoria. How would he fit in the Giants system? No, that's exactly. I mean, hey, I'm all for it. I am all for it. So I look at the free agents this year, and it's a richer list, I think, than in years past. I'm just looking at some of the names in possible fits for the Giants, whether it's, I don't know, a Michael Brantley, or if you're talking about maybe a center fielder, you can go Jackie Bradley Jr. I don't know if Jock Peterson is much of a center fielder anymore, but that would be a fun bat to have and see if the Giants could fix. You know, Farhan Zaidi is intimately familiar with him. Marcell Ozuna may be a little bit too much of a Dr. Strangelove to commit to long term, but then you have the infielders like Tommy La Stella if you want to get really versatile, or maybe you can go DJ LeMahieu if you want to drop some big coin on an infield solution. The Giants will have options this year. They'll have a ton of ways to fix this team.
Fun fact, Jock Peterson, an inductee in the Jewish Sports Hall of Fame of Northern California.
I did not know that.
I know this because he was inducted last year along with San Francisco Chronicle great beat writer for the Giants, Henry Schulman.
Okay. You know, I did know that Jock Peterson was local because he's a weirdo who went to Palo Alto High School and didn't root for the Giants. That bugs me.
Well, yeah. We could ask him all about that in spring training next year, maybe. And he'll locker next to Trevor Bauer and they'll have ribald conversations and we'll be able to capture it all.
You know, it's one thing if you're Stephen Piscotty and you grow up in Pleasanton and you're an A's fan. Okay, I get that. But when you are growing up in Palo Alto, and let's see, what year did he graduate? 2010. Okay, are you serious? You're graduating from Palo Alto High School in 2010, and you're not on board the Giants train. You're not excited about Tim Lincecum and Matt Cain. What team did he root for? Do you remember?
I don't know. Do you know?
No, I can't remember. I don't think it was Dodgers, but it's like, come on, how are you not into the Giants in that period? He must have been really scarred by like the 2006, the Brian Bocock era. I guess that could turn off a kid.
I mean, there's, you know what though? There's something about, I mean, I've talked to a lot of baseball players about who were your favorites growing up or who were the posters on your wall. And I think when you play baseball, you're a little more likely to just gravitate toward the great players. You know, like there are so many guys now who say, oh, I was a huge A-Rod fan. And I'm like, really? But you didn't grow up in New York or Texas when he was playing there. But yeah, there are a lot of people who are A-Rod fans or Jeter fans, or, you know, you just sort of gravitate to the best of the best, you know. So, you know, I'm sure when I'm a little bit older in this game, I'll walk into a clubhouse and I'll ask, who was your favorite player growing up? And they'll say Ronald Acuna Jr. And I'll want to go walk off a four-story building. Say, well, I'm ancient. But it is a little bit strange that Jock Peterson was not a Giants fan. But hey, neither was Troy Tulowitzki, and he grew up in, what, Cupertino?
Oh, that's right. That's another one of those weirdos. I don't like these weirdos. All right. All right, well, this has been episode 110 of the Bags and Brisby podcast. Again, this is our last regular one for a while. When the Giants sign George Springer, we will be back to talk about that. Or when they trade... I think I used that joke last time, but it still amuses me. But yeah, we'll be doing podcasts to cover the breaking news and such, but this is our last regular one for a while. So thanks so much for listening. I had a lot of fun this year. 110 episodes. Can you believe that we've just jabbered back and forth at each other for 110 hours?
Well, it's only felt like 110 hours, but yes. you always have the sign off where you thank everyone for listening. So I'm just going to echo that and say thank you to everybody for listening and for following along. And, you know, even when we're doing the podcast twice a week in April and May and just scrambling to find things to talk about, we somehow got a half hour in twice a week. And it's been a year like none other, but we absolutely appreciate everybody for listening and sticking with us, and hopefully you've been entertained a little bit and maybe not a little more than mildly annoyed at times. And a big thank you to Tanika Smothers for everything she does to make us sound good and to get this out to you. So thanks, Grant, for everything you do.
No, thanks to you. And of course, thanks to Tanika. I mean, you don't know what this sounds like before she gets her hands on it. It's unlistenable. I mean, it's just garbage. But she polishes it up and gets it out to you, and it makes us look good. So thanks to Tanika. Thanks to you for listening. And we will see you as news dictates. Ta-ta for now.